So, hi, my name is Clotilde. I'm a PhD student from Belgium, and I'm mainly working on discomfort glare and daylight. And today I will speak about EVAL glare and the influence of the methods and parameters in EVAL glare on the accuracy of discomfort glare prediction. So, as most of you may know, EVAL glare works, so you have to input an HDR image of a visual scene. And then EVAL glare will use an algorithm to detect some glare source in this visual scene, and it will output some glare matrix value calculated on the basis of this glare source detected. And what I'm interested in is the algorithm that detects the glare sources, because this algorithm has been used for over 10 years now, I think, and there has been no real validation study of EVAL glare, except of Jan's study, which developed it. And actually, you have several methods that you can use in EVAL glare. So the factor method, where you have to multiply the average luminance of the image by a factor to define the threshold of the glare source detection. Then the threshold method, where you directly input a threshold value, and then the task area method, where you define a task area and the average luminance of this task area is used to define the threshold. And you also have several options that you can customize in EVAL glare, such as the background luminance definition, the search radius, the task area, and the smoothing. And so when I had to deal with EVAL glare, I was asking myself which method would be should I use actually for my data, and how do I choose it since there is no validation study. And so I decided to look at it myself. So the aim of this study was to investigate the effect of EVAL glare method and options on the accuracy of discomfort glare prediction. So what does it mean? Well, actually, in EVAL glare, as I just say, you can choose method and options. And then the choice you make there will have an influence on the glare sources that are detected in the image, which in turn will influence the discomfort glare matrix that you are calculating, and which in turn will have an influence on the accuracy of the discomfort glare prediction. So how well the glare matrix fits to the subjective data. And what I was interested in is to look at the reported effect of the choice in you made in EVAL glare on the accuracy of discomfort glare prediction. So the methodology I use is, first I had to define which methods and options I will look at in EVAL glare. So I decided to go for 63 different variations of the algorithm. In the columns, you have the different methods that I use. So you have the factor method, the threshold, and the task area, all with different parameters. And then you also have different options that I tested. So now the factor 5 method is actually the default one in EVAL glare. And also I looked at several options there. And also the task area. So this is the first one is the default options. The two other one here are when you change the search radius distance. This one is when you change the background luminance definition. The smoothing option is mainly, well, it's really seldom used, but you should use it when you have blinds in the scene. And then I also looked at what happens when you change the task area size.
Sure. I interrupt. Can you use factors less than 5?
Yeah.
So why did you choose to only go greater than default and not less?
Because also in FineGlare the factor is 7, and so I was looking at the 5 and 7. I could have go lower. I think I tested it, but it didn't make really sense,
okay. Actually.
And it makes actually more sense to go down in the task area method with the factor. But yeah, you can go higher or lower with these factors. And how to compare these 63 different options? I looked at the accuracy of discomfort glare prediction, so how well the discomfort glare matrix correlates with the subjective glare rating. So I didn't want it to choose only for one glare matrix, so I used the five main daylight discomfort glare metrics that are currently used. And for the subjective glare ratings, the answer were on the 4-point glare scales, or I also used the binary transformation of this 4-point glare scales. And so I used three indicators of this kind of correlation, or how well the matrix fits the subjective data. The first one, of course, is the Spearman correlation coefficient. So the higher the correlation coefficient, the better the accuracy. Then I also used the AUC of a binary logistic regression, using the binary transformation of the 4-point glare scale as the dependent variable, and each one of the five metrics evaluated for each one of the 63 eval glare options as the independent variable. And so again, the higher the AUC, the better the accuracy. And then the last indicator is the AIC of an ordinal logistic regression. So it's also with the dependent variable as the 4-point glare scale and the independent as the glare matrix. And in this case, it works differently because you have to minimize the AIC to have a better accuracy. So actually, these results have been published in a paper, and all these indicators are explained in more details there. So I won't spend more time explaining this, these indicators here. And of course, I had to apply a Bonferroni correction in the p-value because I was comparing 63 different tests, and so I had to apply it to the p-value. Also, I decided to use two different data sets. The main reason was that I wanted to have a larger variety of visual scenes so that the results are pertinent for larger, more discomfort glare studies. The biggest difference between these two studies was, of course, one is a field experiment, the other one is a lab experiment. The 4-point glare scales were different in the two studies, and this happened a lot in glare studies. And also you can see from the vertical illuminance box plots that the field experiment has a quite low vertical illuminance, and this means that when there is discomfort glare, in this case, it's more about contrast glare, whereas in the laboratory study, it's quite high, so it's more about absolute and saturation glare. So going to the results, so I will always present the results in this way. So you have six graphs, the three indicators up there, and then the two data sets. And here, so I compared with, the 11 different eval glare methods. So there were the columns of the table that you just saw. And all other options are set to default. And you have all the five glare metrics that I evaluated. So what we can learn from these graphs, first is that it seems that for the field experiment, the task area method was performing the best, since the accuracy seems higher for the three indicators. And for the lab experiment, the threshold method was, and also the task area method were performing quite well. What we can also see is that the factor method is always on the left of the graph, which means that they have the lowest accuracy of discomfort glare prediction. And this is quite surprising because this this factor method is actually the default one in eval glare. It's also the one implemented in fine glare, and you can also see it in DIVA, for instance. And so I wanted to understand why this factor method didn't work that properly in these cases. And what I could observe from the data is that actually when you have very dim light scenes, well, the factor method doesn't work that well because you have kind of an over-detection of glare sources, because the threshold for glare source detection is quite low since it's based on the average luminance of the image. And then in bright light scenes, it's the opposite. The threshold will be quite high, and you will have an under-detection of glare sources. And so it happens that you have these cases where the scene is rated as no discomfort, and then eval glare will still find some glare sources, or the scene is rated as disturbing and there won't be any clear sources detected. So that was for the Eval Clear methods. Now if you look at the background luminance definition, so what is the two background luminance definitions that I looked at? The first one is the mathematical average background luminance, and the second one is the CIE definition of the background luminance, which is actually an approximation of the background luminance by the indirect vertical luminance divided by pi. And so here the box plots are the 11 Eval Clear methods times the 5 Clear matrix, all plotted in this box plots. And what we can see is that there is actually no big difference when you use either one or the other. So it's actually it doesn't matter that much which one you choose in Eval Clear. The next thing I look is the search radius. So the search radius is the distance between two pixels, defining whether they will be integrated in the same clear source. I used three different search radius, and obviously looking at these graphs I should maybe have looked at a lot more, because I can't really conclude something from these graphs. The only thing is that the middle one, which is 0.2 and which is the default search radius in Eval Clear, seems to work the best here in this case. But that's the only conclusion I can do from these graphs. Then I look also at the task area size. So there is no default task area size in Eval Clear, but there is a common one that people seem to use most often, is the 60 degree opening angle, because it includes like the computer screen and a part of the keyboard. And then I took also one lower and one higher. In the laboratory experiment, we cannot really say anything from these graphs, but in the field experiment, it seems like the smaller the task area size, the better the accuracy. And so to understand this, I looked at the evolution of the task area luminance when you change this task area size. So in the laboratory study, where it was always the same scene, when you change the task area size, you have kind of a constant, evolution of the task area luminance. But then in the field study, when you change the task area size, it's a bit more random. But if we look at the 30 degree, which is the lightest orange curve, we can see that it's a bit more constant in the task luminance. So that might be the reason why it's performing a bit better. And then the last option that I looked at is the smooth option, which is really, I think, almost never used in Eval Clear. And it was a bit surprising to see that with the smooth option, you actually always get a better accuracy. So the difference is still small, but it's consistent through the two data sets and the three indicators. And so I wanted to know why this smooth option provides a better accuracy of this confocal glare prediction. And so I looked at the glare impact. So it's the basic formula included in every glare matrix today, and how this smooth option affected this glare impact formula. Well, from the relation between the glare source luminance and the solid angle of the glare source, I could not really conclude anything, because the effect of the smooth option was not constant. It really depended on the visual scene you were analyzing. But then there was a constant change due to the smooth option of the background luminance. So when you use the smooth option, the background luminance systematically decreases, because actually the smooth option takes the pixels which are nested in a glare source, so and it includes these pixels in the glare source. So mainly you use it when you have blinds, because then the dark part of the blinds are also included in the glare source. And so what we observe is that when there is a decrease in the background luminance, the accuracy of this confocal glare prediction seems to be a bit better. So what we can actually conclude from this study are some recommendations for Eval Clear. The first one is about a method. So it seems like when you have scenes with contrast glare, the task area methods seems to work pretty well. And then with saturation glare, we would recommend the threshold method or the task area with these specific factors, parameters. The background luminance definition doesn't actually influence this comfort glare prediction. For the search radius, the default in EvaClear seems to be the best one, although more research could be needed to look into more details into this parameter. For the task area size, also either the from 30 to 60 degrees seems to work pretty well as also. And then the conclusion for the smooth option, well, it should not be conclude that we should use the smooth option to produce better results in glare studies. This is not the point I wanted to make, but this might be used to reconsider maybe the glare impact formula, which is used in all glare metrics today, and re-question the weighting of the main parameters of this glare matrix. Also, I wanted to emphasize on the importance of choosing the right methods in EvaClear. So this is something that I observed in the into the two datasets I use. These are extreme cases, but so this is one case of the field study and one case of the laboratory study. And depending on the methods and options you are using in EvaClear, you can have different DGP values, which means that you will categorize your visual scene in different glare categories. In this case, it's only one category difference in glare evaluations, because the DGP was developed to be quite stable. But then if you take another glare matrix, mostly based on the contrast, on the, well, the glare source actually, then you have like very high differences. So for instance, one example in the field study, so when using some the threshold 1000 candelas per square meter, well, you wouldn't find any glare sources, so it would end up in a imperceptible glare situation. But using another parameter and another method, you would end up with several glare sources, which would end up in an unacceptable evaluation. And this is even higher differences for the laboratory study on the right. So the last thing is, well, following this study, I think Jan made some changes in the EvaClear, and it's already downloadable. The version has been updated now. So there will be a new default method. Before it was the factor 5 method, but we saw that it didn't perform quite well. And so now the default method would be the threshold 2000 candelas. And also, if the task method is chosen, the threshold, the default factor will be the factor 5. There will be also a new default background luminance calculation. Before it was a mathematical average background luminance. It doesn't really change a lot in the results at the end, but it's more consistent with what is provided as definition in the CIE standards. And then there will be also a new option to change this background luminance calculation. And so there will be either the CIE definition, which is the default one, or the mathematical average background luminance, which was the former one, or again, a last one, but this one is not recommended because it includes the glare sources in the background luminance, and this brings other problems. So thank you.
Thank you.
Discomfort glare, there are two main types. There is the contrast glare and then the saturation glare. In the case of the contrast glare, I think the adaptation of the eye plays an important role. And that's the type of glare that we had in the field experiment. And that's why the task area method, which takes into account the adaptation of the eye in this case, works better. And then for the saturation glare, it's more about the vertical illuminance. And that's mainly why, DGP is the only one metric that includes both the contrast and the saturation glare in the formula. And the task area method works also pretty well for the saturation glare situation. So I don't say the threshold method is the best one. We couldn't use it as a default method in Everglare because it means that the person has to implement and task, define the task area. So it cannot be used as a default method. So that's why we implement the threshold method, because it works better than the factor method.
And so one follow-up on that is that, I think if I recall correctly, you recommended a size of the task area, like 60 degrees or something.
Opening angle.
But is that an absolute, or would it be better to size it to the size of your task?
The 60 degrees is when you have a normal office person working at a normal distance from the computer screen. This opening angle includes both the screen, the computer screen, and a bit of the keyboard. So I would say that this is the usual opening angle that you should use. But then I think it depends on the situation. And if you don't have the standard situation, maybe you should adapt this task area.
So I think
I want to interact also quickly on that. The main thing is these are just some hints. The main recommendation is you have to check your image if the glare sources are really detected reliably.
Sure.
I think this is really a core thing, because I see many people are just applying it and then they are wondering why the results are so weird. Of course, you know, everything depends on the scene you're putting in, you know, and you have to make a check, a visual check, if the glare sources are detected correctly. That's why I implemented three methods in there, which are totally different, more or less, and you can adjust it to your scene, but it doesn't free you from checking if the result is really reliable, because it's not the human in there really saying, okay, this is a glare source or not. It's just a help. And we saw that the default values, if you don't do anything, so you have this average luminance factor 5, that this is not working correctly. But many people are using it. That's why we said, okay, let's investigate it and then change the default setting. And I'm totally with you. It changes with the adaptation level in general.
I have a theory for why the 2,000, you know, candelas per meter squared is sort of a magic value. It just so happens that kind of threshold works for determining determining between daylight and electric light. Sort of like electric light tends to be well below 2,000, and daylight tends to be well above. So kind of telling you indoors versus outdoors.
So roughly 10 times longer lumens, which is one of the IES criteria.
Yeah, so it's just a number that tends to work, even if it's not based in your adaptation.
If you go to outdoor glare like you are doing, you know, then I would apply a completely another threshold maybe or whatever, so you cannot do this anymore.
Just an aside to this, in the sort of dark ages before DGP and all the fancy glarimetrics, we used 2,000 candela per meter squared for the New York Times.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was Bob Thurs.
Yeah, so that was the average across the window area, I think, wasn't it, that we used.
And they even use that in the commissioning phase.
Yeah.
And actually, at the moment, sorry to interrupt you, for the calculation method for the UGR, there will be an update on that. The CIB method will change, and they use now also 2,000 candela per square meter, what you count as a glare source,
right.
from your light fixture. This will be published soon. So, but this is by chance that they, because we had that established already before.
I think the POE at the New York Times, that showed, I think, by and large, people were pretty happy with the environment, and the main thing was this loss of connectiveness to the outside, but, you know, when the blinds are down. Is there anything else?
That's such a long time ago, John.
I have another question. When you're doing the calculations, do you use that the camera has to be the fisheye camera, or you can use a regular one?
Well, you're evaluating glare for the field of view of the participants. So if you want to evaluate the field of view, then you should use a field fisheye lens camera.
Because if I use the reps for the sphere, it does not require a fisheye. But if I use the Mustafa's the pathway for evaluations, if you do not use the fisheye camera, it gives you a hint since it's calculation is not a big friend. So that's
it's a warning basically. If the view is not fisheye, you just say like you're not using fisheye. So
okay, so it's just in the HR calibration, yeah.
So your answer is has to be a fisheye camera.
I would say for glare evaluation in the field of view, yes.
Yeah, you're not going to find any glare sources that are good.
But I wouldn't say it has to, but the recommendation is to have one.
Yeah.
You know, if you are in a laboratory study and you know that your glare sources are always
around
the window and you're capturing the window, then you can use another lens and then have beside the lens an illuminance sensor, and then you can feed in the illuminance reading in line air, for example, and a non-fisheye image, and you can do as well your glare evaluation.
Okay.
But this is a, let's say, this is really for laboratory studies, and for people who know what they are doing, to be honest, because you can do so many mistakes with that, it's not really something I recommend to do. The recommendation is to use a fisheye lens.
There's an old tutorial by Shelby Boyle showing how to do it out there with an image measurement and a non-fisheye camera. But I always wonder if the view parameters get auto-extrapolated so that are correct, you know, if that's not the case, and then all sorts of things. So, fisheye's
better. Hey, we done? All right, bye.
Thank you.